Welcome to Prima's 2023 podcast series. My name is Shonda Ragland. I am the Senior Director of Education and Training at Prima. On this Prima podcast, David Susskind will discuss workforce absence in the public sector. David is the Senior Vice President, Workforce Absence and Disability Practice Leader at Sedgwick. We will also be joined by Prima's Education Coordinator, Taekwon Gilbert. Taekwon will moderate the discussion. Enjoy the podcast.
Thank you for joining us today, David.
It's my pleasure.
So as Sedgwick's new Workforce Absence and Disability Practice Leader, what do you see as some of the more pressing workforce absence issues facing public sector organizations today?
So there are a lot of things that I see that are coming up that are impacting public sector employers. Primarily, it's the number of states that are adding in statutory paid and family medical leave benefits, some which states and public sector employers are required to participate, others where it is optional. And there's even a third class of states where it's neither optional, it's not optional, but it's not mandatory that any employer has to participate. So it's going to create a real challenge for public sector employees as they start to navigate all this legislation.
So you mentioned a number of states are passing statutory paid and medical leave benefits. What does this legislation entail, and how will the new legislation impact public sector organizations?
So the legislation in general requires employers, and it's both for, you know, private and public sector employers, to provide statutory benefits. Now, it could be similar to disability benefits like short-term disability. It also includes paid family leave benefits. These are things like bonding, care of a family member, military agency, reasons that you would typically find under FMLA, the Family Medical Leave Act. But it also includes other things such as victims of sexual and domestic violence. Some states are adding in bereavement as an income replacement or job protection benefit. As I noted, not all public sector employers are required to participate. In some states, you can opt out of it. Others, they are required to participate into it. For example, in New Hampshire, all state agencies have to participate in the state's program, while it's voluntary for private sector employers. The reason why this is important is for public sector entities, they are competing for the same talent in today's market that private sector employers are searching for, which means that if an employee is choosing between going to a public sector, you know, agency versus going to a private sector employer, they may be have the ability to get new benefits or additional benefits under a state statutory program that a public sector is not required to provide. And that really can impact their ability to not only attract, but retain the talent that they currently have, because employees are starting to factor more and more access to these benefits. And COVID really kind of enhanced that several years ago as employees, you know, got access to these type of benefits for the very first time. So that's why I think it's important that public sector has to pay attention to this, because it's going to impact their ability to, you know, basically keep the good people they have and attract new people down the road.
What actions should public sector organizations be considering in response to this legislation as they develop their plans and strategies going forward?
That's a great question. As always, and you know, employers, regardless of whether you're a public sector or private, but public sector employees should be reviewing this legislation and comparing it to the benefits, what they currently have offered and what's coming down the line. Oftentimes, the question has to be asked, do you have similar benefits? Do you have superior benefits? Are those benefits going to be below what an employee could receive via state program? Does the state allow public sector employees to opt into the state program, even if the employer, the public employer, has not chosen to participate? If they are required to participate in those programs, I mentioned New Hampshire, Vermont, for example, where it's mandatory for state employees, how does that impact other public sector employers? Are you considered part of the state? Are you considered a local municipality? Are you a school district? How does that all translate in? For those employers that do choose to opt in, especially in the public sector, what does that look like in terms of cost? For example, at my previous employer, we were helping public sector employers in Colorado basically take a look at the cost-benefit analysis of participating in the program versus simply modifying their current existing benefits to provide a similar type benefit. The reason we were doing that is Colorado, with their paid family medical leave, gives employees the opportunity to opt into the state program even if their employer doesn't. So I think employers, especially public sector employers, have to be taking a look at what their programs are going to look like a year to 2 years out, especially due to some of the budgeting processes that we see in the public sector, to make sure that their benefits, not where they are right now, but where they're going to be in a year or two, are in line with what is coming down the road, especially if they're in a statutory state, you know, one of the 13, 14 statutory states that either have paid family medical leave or those that are coming on board.
In your opening remarks, you also mentioned the recent Supreme Court decision related to the Groff versus the Joy case and its impact on religious accommodations. Can you provide an overview of that case and its outcome?
Yeah, so this is one of the last cases that was decided this term by the Supreme Court. The case surrounded a public sector employee who was an employee of the United States Post Office, and that was Groff. Groff had originally sought the job at the post office because he didn't have to work on Sundays, which, you know, is when he went to his religious services and participated in those events. A couple of years ago, when the post office signed an agreement with Amazon to start providing Sunday deliveries, Goff was told that he needed to work on Sundays since, you know, the post office trying to accommodate him and find other people to cover his shifts was too burdensome and too expensive. The plaintiff in the case ultimately wound up leading the post office, but he still sued under Title VII and basically told that the United States Postal Service failed to accommodate his religious exceptions. Now, what was at heart of the case was not the request to work off on Sundays, but was the reason that the United States Postal Service denied the request. Is back in 1977, there was a case basically called what was known as the de minimis standard. And in that case in 1977, the court had ruled that if an employer said that there was any type of minimal cost or burden to providing a religious accommodation, that the employer wouldn't have to do it. And that has been the standard in place since 1977. In this case basically took aim at the de minimis standard and said that, hey, you know, you can't just say it's going to be too expensive without providing that. And the Supreme Court in a unanimous decision this term basically threw that standard out. What it said was, is that if you're going to say that it is going to cost, you're going to have to determine what that substantial burden or cost is. And it places a very heavy burden on employers to show that the cost of providing the accommodation would be too substantial to the organization versus just saying, hey, it's just too costly. Now, what's important about this case is two things. One, the court didn't rule on the validity of the accommodation request. It just focused in on the de minimis standard. But what was also important is they didn't define what substantial is. So that is going to be open to interpretation in the next couple of years as to how lower courts are going to apply that standard, especially if religious accommodation cases start to make their way through the courts. But particularly for public sector employers, I do think that this is going to have a greater impact than it would on private sector employers.
How will the Groff versus the Joy decision impact public sector organizations going forward? And what plan adjustments should they be considering?
I think it's going to greatly impact public sector employers because, as I noted, it resets the standard around religious accommodation. As I noted in the past, the 1977 case, Hardison versus Transworld Airlines, stated that employers could deny a request providing it resulted more than a de minimis cost. Basically, if it was going to cost you money, you could reject it. Now that the court has threw out that standard, stating that Title VII doesn't actually say that, but rather the employer would need to show what that accommodation, you know, substantial increased cost is to the operation. Since the court didn't define what substantial actually meant, it's going to be up to employers to determine what that initial line is. And more importantly, they're going to have to be able to validate it. So, for example, you know, and I'll just use the Groff case as an example. If an employee says, I can't work on Sundays because that's, you know, I have a sincere held religious belief and that's the day for my services or worship, the employer is going to have to be able to show why granting them accommodation not to work on Sunday is going to substantially impact their operations. Does it mean you have to hire more people? Are you going to have to pay overtime for other employees? Is it going to cause staffing shortages at other type of the week because you're resetting schedules? There is no real standard, but a public sector employer is going to have to figure that out. Adding to the complexity for some public sector employers is if you're dealing with unions such as fire, police, or other unions within, you know, a public sector employer, may have union contractual obligations that come into play that could further complicate this. And while I don't expect to see anything immediately, I suspect over the next several months and into next year, we're going to see more and more employees starting to request this. And it's going to cause a challenge because, A, you're going to have to figure out, do they have a sincerely held religious belief that this, you know, that this is important to them? And there is no standard for proving that. And second, if they're going to reject it, they're going to have to start looking at why they're rejecting it. If they say it's because of cost, they're going to have to be able to back that up. Now, this could be very difficult to do in certain cases, especially when you're dealing with things like fire police or operations, because how do you really determine the impact on that? And since the court, as I noted, hasn't defined what substantial is yet, that is going to be what, you know, what an employer may view as substantial, the courts or the employee may not view as substantial. So I think we're going to see a lot of challenges in the next, you know, 12 to 18 months on this. And organizations should start taking a look at forward and saying, hey, if we have to do an accommodation, and the most common accommodation is usually for time off or schedule change or something like that. Not always, but that's one we typically see. What is that going to look like for the organization, especially as, you know, public sector employers take a look at their budgeting process, which sometimes can be a year or two out?
Peering into your crystal ball, what should public sector organizations prepare for during the second half of 2023 as they put together their strategic plans for 2024 and beyond?
Well, that's a great question. As I noted, I think the Groff decision is going to be the primary focus that we're going to be working on in the second half of 23. And that is going to be specifically, how are they going to address these requests when they're going to have to, you know, provide framework for what is a substantial burden? Does this meet that threshold? And creating a new framework for addressing these. I think that's going to be a huge challenge, especially as I noted, when you start factoring in that we're dealing with things like unions, et cetera. Benefits is going to continue to be an issue as states continuing to add leave and statutory frameworks, whether it's mandatory in certain states, you know, it's optional in other states, or it's states like Texas and Virginia and Alabama and Tennessee, where they're creating frameworks that allow employers, both public and private sector employers, to basically enhance their group disability benefits by offering paid family leave benefits similar to what you would with short-term disability or long-term disability. The reason why I think that's going to be important is if in a public sector employer is not required to participate with them, they're going to have to figure out what the impact of that is when they're competing for talent in the market. You know, if an employee has to make a choice between going to a private sector employer that offers all of these benefits, plus other things such as, you know, enhanced maternity benefits, paid parental leave, bereavement, and so forth, versus going to a public sector employer that may or may not be required to provide those benefits, that could wind up causing an issue for public sector employers. And specifically since, as a public sector employer, costs often have to come into mind because they could be tax dollars or budgets are set a year or two out. They need to start looking long term as to how are we going to prioritize those and realize that just because the market is moving this way as it relates to, you know, religious accommodations, paid family medical leave, often with public sector employers, there are other priorities that tend to move to the forefront that they're also going to have to compete with based on, you know, what the constituents they serve are determining as, hey, we want you to pay attention to this versus, you know, what type of benefits you're offering.
We've reached the end of our podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Please visit the Prima website to hear other Prima podcasts, view upcoming Prima webinars, read Prima blogs, and learn about other Prima educational resources. Be sure to check us out on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and our very own Prima Talk. Have an amazing day.